Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live across the United States and the world, this is David Duke. And as I say almost every day, that I believe, and I hope you believe, in the right of every people on this earth to be free and independent. In fact, that's the basis of our Declaration of Independence, to preserve their own particular expression of humanity, heritage, culture, and the biodiversity that's in humanity and in nature. I believe that every people has a right to control their own destiny and celebrate the things that make them unique. And the truth is that humanity is unique. Humanity is not one. We are not all the same. We're very different. And it's so ironic that the people who control the globalist media keep blathering about diversity and how we have blessings of diversity in our countries. But the truth is that diversity is not the strength of people. We see it again and again and again throughout history. We've seen the invasions of one people against another. We've seen population shifts. We've seen oppressions of people all throughout human history. In fact, demographics is history. And the fact is, when you put people of very different religious values, of different cultural values, of different races, different fundamental characters, different languages, this more than not leads to, well, it leads to violence. It leads to conflict. It does not lead to harmony. It does not make the nation stronger. It tends to divide the nation. And we've had probably more civil wars or civil conflict between ethnic groups and religious groups and differences within nations than in terms of wars between nations. Now, think about that. It's kind of interesting. Nations were originally created by what you call a tribe or an ethnic group. That's, you know, the Franks created what's called France. We can go on and on. The people who create a nation reflect in the nation, in the culture, the values of the people historically, traditionally. And the people have a lot more common than that. They also have certain similarities of appearance. They have similarities of body form. They have similarities of personality. And yes, personality has lots of inherited characteristics. I like to go over these things sometimes because it's so important to do that. Globalism and communism has always been a absolutely destructive force against true diversity. They've tried to regiment us, and we saw that in what the communists did in Russia and many other countries in the name of equality. That's the problem. You see, if you're trying to make everybody equal, you don't, and you can't have any real freedom, can you? You can't recognize the exceptional individual, the hardest working individual, most creative individual. We certainly should have a system in our own nations where the best rise to the top. Of course, we don't have that today. We have a system dedicated to an equal result, not an equal opportunity. There is massive discrimination going on right now in America against white people in this country, in hiring, in promotions, in college admissions, in college advancement, graduate schools. We have massive discrimination that goes on in major corporations against white people specifically. It's called affirmative action. And yet these same people in media, the same people in government blather all the time about so-called equal rights and everybody's got to be respected, not for the color of their skin, but the content of their character. You know, on and on and on. It's a big lie. Because we have better qualified white people again and again and again being discriminated against in jobs, employment, scholarships, and opportunity. Every one of the Fortune 500 companies does this. Almost every state government, almost every local government, city government, almost every federal agency. You look at the perfect example is Chicago, one of the best jobs around, one of the most secure jobs with a lot of benefits, even Social Security benefits that you get from working from the post office. And we look at a city like Chicago where Blacks are only about 20% of the overall population of the area, but they're like 85 or 89% of the post office. And that's because they've had programs that discriminate against those applicants with better records who are white, because they're white, because they've got these quota goals for hiring. You see the same kind of thing going on all over the United States in the post office, but in so many different agencies. So we have a discrimination. And now we come to the issue that animates me, and I hope animates you, and to understand all this. The reason why we have this massive discrimination against European Americans is because European Americans have lost control over their government, because they've lost control over their media, because they've lost control over their financial institutions. And ironically, in the long run, this works against not only white Americans and white Europeans, it works against the whole world. Because by controlling our policies, by having organizations that are working for Jewish interests and the interests of Israel, international Zionism, they sponsor horrendous wars. They cause tremendous conflicts. They incite different people inside the nations because they're a small minority. The only way they can rule is basically by dividing society, causing conflict and ethnic hatreds, and then kind of mediate between them. I mean, but they don't really mediate, and then rule over them, because all the groups have to vie for them to get good treatment in the media, good treatment in terms of politics, and that's how they control. Now, a perfect example of this is what I often call the Jewish deep state, the Jewish deep state, the Jewish establishment in America, the Jewish elite that rules America. And yes, leading Jews and leading Jewish publications like the New York Times boast about the fact that they have replaced the American elite. And there's massive discrimination. We talked about discrimination in jobs, employment, scholarships, every Fortune 500 company. Most universities today have programs that discriminate against better qualified European Americans. And it's no more important, no more important area of society that deals with that, of course, is the Ivy League and the leading universities of the country. I live in a city called New Orleans and grew up here. And the leading university, and it's an elite university in this country, is called Tulane University. It was created by Paul Tulane, who founded the school, gave tremendous amounts of money from his hard work and his development and success business-wise. He dedicated the school to Christian values and Christian education. Today, Tulane University is somewhere between 30 and 35% Jewish. It's one of the most Jewish organizations. It's a very elite school. And it's basically completely controlled by Jews. They run the administration of the school. They discriminate against non-Jews. They put in Jews of far less qualifications over Gentiles, right, who are better qualified but who are not Jewish. And the same thing goes on in the what we call the Ivy League, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and they control the establishment. Now, in addition to controlling and having this individual Jewish elite, remember that Jews are really taught, even in popular movies, about how, you know, the world kind of hates them and there's anti-Semitism everywhere and there's the Holocaust and blah, blah, blah. And they're really taught that they got to stick together. And the Jewish community teaches that. And Jewish literature teaches that. And books teach that. So they are really programmed from the time they're young to intrinsically and inherently stand up or believe that they have to support Jewish causes and positions that they think are important to Jews. Now, this is also fundamentally an aspect of the Jewish establishment. I talked the other day about a Jewish Telegraph Agency report out of New York about how that all four of the largest Jewish denominations and religious denominations, and they're very rich. And by the way, we don't know how rich they are because we do know they're rich, but we don't know how much because they file under religious. They don't even file. They don't have to tell us anything. So I'm going to talk about Jewish money that's not even these denominations, which are huge and powerful. And these Jewish denominations, of course, are Orthodox, are Reform, are conservative, and what's called restrictionist, or reconstructionist, I believe it's called. And all these Jewish religious groups are now openly acting in political lobbying and a political, what you call advocacy, for domestic issues in the United States and foreign policy issues. They've been doing that for a long time, advocating for foreign policy in Israel. They've also, frankly, advocated for And these are leading Jews, leading spokesmen, leading rabbis. They've absolutely advocated for the big wars like the First World War, the Second World War, the Afghanistan War, the Iraq War, you name it. And they have been involved in that. And that's really a violation of their tax status. But it even says in the article, they're not worried about it. Well, of course they're not worried about it, because the people who are going to prosecute them, they're controlled by the same elements. They have so much infiltration, even in the Trump administration. And Trump went against the neocons, absolutely. And he seems to be opposed to neocon policy. But they're all over the place in his administration. They're all over the place in the bowels of the government. And the government deep state still really hates Trump. And the Jewish elite, no question about it, hates Trump. And part of the news about that today is that we just learned that the FBI has opened an official investigation of Trump's possible law-breaking in terms of contacts with Russians and so forth. The Republican establishment, which again is often, it's just much controlled by Jewish money, and the Democratic establishment, they're set out to impeach Trump, or at least at the very minimum, cripple Trump so badly that he can't fulfill any of his promises, and that he will be their servant in terms of foreign policy, in terms of Israel, in terms of the wars. He talked against the wars in the very beginning, even though the fact, and he talked against the Iraq war disaster. Everybody knows that the Iraq war was a Jewish war. It was driven by Jewish, quote, intellectuals, neocons and neocommies. The major press like Newsweek, Time Magazine talks about it. Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Pearl and Wormser and Feith, Douglas Feith, all Jewish extremists, that they were the architects of the war. In fact, Pearl and Feith and Wormser actually wrote a paper for Benjamin Netanyahu called Securing the Realm, which was written back in the 1990s, not for America, but for Israel, and how that we've got to have war with, well, Iraq, that happened, with Syria, that's been happening. They did it through infiltration and support of radical groups like ISIS, against Lebanon and against Iran. Now, that's the nature of that creature. And this is all admitted. I mean, Jewish newspapers like Haaretz in Israel write about all this. So they are an organized community, but they also are organized with a huge network. And this is what the deep state, this is what the Zionist occupied government's all about. I want to refer to an article called $26 billion. We have an article about that in the davidduke.com. We're going to update it and so that you can read it as well. And it's called $26 billion, the Jewish Charity Industry Uncovered. Now, when people talk, and when you say that the Jews have a program or they have a policy or they have a tremendous effect on certain domestic policies in the United States, people say, oh, no, the Jews who are for gun control just happen to be Jews. The Jews for open borders just happen to be Jews. The Jews for gay marriage just happen to be Jews. They just happen to be. It's just a coincidence. That's what they say. Yeah, right. You know, because almost every major Jewish organization, so-called advocacy groups, takes positions exactly as I've explained them just now. So there is a Jewish deep state organization. And let's talk about the funding. So the name of this article is from The Forward, major Jewish publication. It's written by Josh Nathan Kazis, K-A-Z-I-S. And that's kind of interesting too, folks, because isn't it interesting how so many of these Jews have like forms or similar forms to the word Nazi in them? I mean, it's really kind of interesting. It's really kind of strange in a way. Ashkenazi, you know. They talked about Nazareth, you know. Josh Nathan Kazi, you know. I mean, it's really kind of interesting. Anyway, the Jewish Charity Organizations Network is a font. This is a quote. Let me just quote from you and see what I tell you what Jewish organizations say. The article is, by the way, $26 billion, the Jewish charity industry uncovered. Quote, the American Jewish Community's network of charity organizations is a font of Jewish power, a source of communal pride, and a huge mystery. Well, actually, not so. We know that the network exists. We know that its federations, social service groups, advocacy organizations influence America's domestic and foreign policy. So Jews admit of their influence. And now we're going to talk about real influence, you know? They write, until now, we've had no idea what the network looks like. Individual organizations file tax returns. Some umbrella groups offer information on their members' network, but no one has measured the network as a whole, how much it spends, how much it raises, how it prioritizes causes, how much it gets from the government. Now the Forward has identified and reviewed tax documents filed by more than 3,600 Jewish organizations in the most comprehensive survey ever of the financial workings of the Jewish tax-exempt ecosystem. Now, these are all tax-exempt. Now, the Forward's investigation, he goes on to say, has uncovered a tax-exempt Jewish communal apparatus that operates on the scale of a Fortune 500 company and focuses the largest share of its donor dollars on Israel. And then they say, listen to this now. This analysis doesn't include synagogues and other groups that avoid revealing their financial information by claiming religious exemption. But even without this substantial sector, the Jewish communities, federations, schools, healthcare, social services, all groups, cultural and communal advocacy groups, report net assets of $26 billion. $26 billion. They point out that these Jewish groups spend more money than the American Department of Interior, which handles all Indian affairs, U.S. parks, I mean, a lot of other things. Administrators, it covers total Guam, American Samoa, Virgin Islands. I mean, this is amazing. And these advocacy groups basically are almost all sheltered under tax-exempt status. So when they promote these Jewish advocacy organizations, they're really doing it with your tax money, in a sense, because otherwise the tax money would be going into the cost of government. Most of your money goes into the cost of government. It doesn't, you can't, you know, how many average working people in this country deduct sizable amounts, even upper middle class people can't even afford to deduct sizable amounts for charity. Now, this is amazing stuff. There's another one of these reports that they did that shows that there is massive, and this is massive, how these networks reliance on government aid through grants, tax deductions, and program fees. So they get a lot of their money, which they advocate for Jewish causes, from the United States government, from you folks, just like your money pays for so many thousands of programs in Israel that don't benefit you or your family, and your family might need some help sometime. Your money, without your consent, goes to Israel, right? Billions of dollars every year, half of our entire foreign aid budget. Now, interestingly enough, these Jewish advocacy groups, and you can read about it in the article, and I'm not going to read the whole article to you. There's actually three sections to it. It's found in the Jewish Forward. If you read the article, it just shows that it's amazing, their financial power. And if you read it, it's always that it's Jewish this, it's Jewish that. And one of the funniest things, they even talked about five groups' names worth knowing, you know, of this huge apparatus. It's just some of the Jewish organizations. Listen, it's always something for Israel, Jewish residents. Here's five group names worth noting. This is what they wrote in the Forward. Let me quote. Here's one. Hebrew Wizards, that's one of your tax-exempt, maybe tax-financed organizations, Hebrew Wizards, you know, allergists for Israel. That just makes me want to sneeze. Society of Israel, I can't read it into the print small, philatelists. So there you go. International Center for the Study of Jewish Heroism. International Center for the Study of Jewish Heroism. Jewish residents of the leisure world. Now, let's just turn it around. Let's just have If imagine there was, you know, and this is why they get their way. You know, whites are a majority, vast majority of American people, but we are been taught that it's evil for us to defend our specific rights. The reason why we have this contravalence of our rights, why our kids are being discriminated against, why our culture is being destroyed, while we're being ethnically cleansed by this immigration into our country, the reason why is because we've taught, for one thing, that it's really evil if we defend our common interests. Now, imagine if you had an organization, you know, and $26 billion of advocacy directly in the name of white people and the interests of white people. Think about that. Imagine if you had a group like these five group names, Hebrew out here, wizards. How about white wizards? Man, in fact, I was one once, so I should know about that. Anyway, allergists for Israel. Well, allergists for white people. Society of Israel, Philatelist, I can't even pronounce it today. Sorry, I'm just not putting it together. It's divided in my screen here. International Center for the Study of White Terrorism. Could you imagine that? How about white residents of the leisure world? I mean, you could see something in the American media, you know, showing white people, you know, white privilege and having white people sipping tea on the Riviera or something and white people, you know, rich resorts and all that. But, you know, the truth is you could never, you'd never see a thing ridiculing this incredibly rich Jewish leisure class, this Jewish privilege, for instance, in our universities and so forth. I mean, the level of this power of this Jewish state is amazing. It's amazing. Now, not only do these groups, $26 billion worth, and even the groups that are more on charities for saying help Jewish health needs, which is like most Jews help themselves. They're very rich people, but they have per capita more support than any other people, which is fine. That's good for them. But if white people did that specifically, they would be called vicious racists, right? The hypocrisy is amazing. Remember, folks, anti-Semitism is the demand. Jews follow the same precepts that they demand for non-Jews. The Jews demand for non-Jews. Back in a second with Dr. Patrick Slattery, we'll discuss this. We had Andrew England scheduled, but his internet went completely out this morning. We hope to have him on in a few days, maybe one day later this week or next week. I talked to him right before the show. Okay, back in a minute. Okay, folks, this is David Duke, and we're talking about the Jewish deep state. We're talking about the real centers of power, and this is what you've got to understand, folks, if you're a European American or Black American or whatever. You know, because they do a divide and conquer, and for the Jewish power structure, the Jewish interest, the Jewish community, the Jewish people, to reach this dominance, to become the elite of America, and to dominate our media, dominate our government, dominate our financial structure, as they'd like to do the Federal Reserve Bank, you know, for them to accomplish this, what they had to do was, as they always do, divide and conquer. That's what I got in trouble for with that video. My video was how Zionists divide and conquer. This is their age-old tactic. So in a way, it makes sense for them when they're going against trying to replace the American majority, the American elite, the people that the founding people that built the country, the original Europeans that created our society, built our major industry, gave us our constitution, our Declaration of Independence, our traditions, our culture, our heritage, our underpinning of the corporations like the Ford Motor Company, the putting America on wheels, the great developing the oil industry, all the things that created a very powerful economic country, a cultural country, a spiritual country, a Christian country. For them to do that, you know, they had to try to, in many ways, empower other groups, mobilize them politically, and that's exactly what they did. In the early 1900s, they created the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP. And interestingly enough, the National Association for Advancement of Colored People was almost completely controlled by Jews. Yes, Jews, not black people. Not black Jews, Jews. And they ran it. And most of them were Jewish communists. So they saw the motive, you know, this incitement of black people against white people as a battering ram, so to speak, against us. And they also knew that changes in terms of the voting patterns and all that would definitely empower them in their divide and conquer strategy. The NAACP was founded, by the way, for your information, by 10 Jewish communists and one black communist. And the NAACP, now this is like those amazing facts. It's like Ripley's Believe It or Not. How many of you know, even have any idea, not only is it not reported in the media, but it's typical the way things go, that the NAACP, the leading black advocacy group in the United States of America, made so by the media supporting it and the Jews that created it and funded it, because NAACP Legal Defense Fund has always been run by Jews, it still is. Even the president of the NAACP up until the 1970s, when Benjamin Hook came in, up until the 1970s, from 10 or 12 to 1970, it always had Jewish presidents. Now, can you figure that out? Even if Jews were sincere about this, if they didn't have alternative or alternate motives or strange motives, it seems like if they really wanted to empower the blacks, wouldn't they pushed a black into positions of their own organizations? Now, they used black spokesmen. A good example was during the 60s when I grew up, they had Roy Innes as one of their spokesmen. And Roy Innes was, you know, in fact, he was the what they called the secretary. And that's the guy who always got the press. You know, it wasn't Kitty Kaplan. It wasn't Joel Spingarn or Arthur Spingarn, the other Jewish presidents. It was the secretary of the NAACP. That's who was told for the public consumption while they were behind and pulling the strings. Now, these organizations that they work with are just amazing. And the $26 billion that Forward's talking about in these Jewish organizations that have huge amounts of power. I mean, they employ, these organizations employed more people than the Ford Motor Company. And that's not counting the part of it that is hidden from you, because most of the Jewish organizations, first off, are exempt from taxes, like the many synagogues and other so-called charitable groups connected. Let me quote to you here. Listen to this, folks. This is right out of the Forward magazine article. This is March 2014. The 619 Israel-focused organizations include advocacy agencies like the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. That's, again, an advocacy group that basically wants to bend American foreign policy in the interest of Israel, not in the interest of America, and we've had a disastrous policy because of it. And it goes on. And hybrids like Hadassah, the Women's Jewish Zionist Organization of America. It goes on. American Jews gave other money to Jewish institutions that isn't reflected in this breakdown. Dues and donations to synagogues, tuition fees to Jewish day schools. But the $3.7 billion represents the philanthropic discretionary spending of American Jews, the money that they choose to give after their obligations to synagogues and other fees are met. Now listen to this, and I quote, there's still a lot missing from the sketch of the Jewish not-for-profit network offered by the Forwards, that's the Jewish Forwards, new analysis. If the 3,600 Jewish organizations that filed with the IRS are a snowy iceberg, the Jewish groups that claim religious exemption and don't file are the mountain hiding underwater. The IRS doesn't require synagogues to fill tax returns. Synagogue umbrella groups aren't required to file either, nor are elementary or high schools that are affiliated with the synagogue. Most rabbinical seminaries qualify as an integrated auxiliary of a synagogue or group of synagogues, meaning that they don't file either. It's impossible to know, to say, he says, how many such Jewish groups are there or how much money they raise. And second, in 2010, a University of Washington professor named Paul Burstein published an analysis of a different IRS database that counted 3,495 Jewish religious organizations that are completely tax exempt. Now, understand something, folks, that these so-called Jewish schools, these yeshivas, these organizations, all of them, in addition to saying this is our Jewish religious view, and don't forget now that half of the Jews that attend synagogue regularly are atheists, that they don't even believe in God. That's according to Jews themselves who say this. So the primary aspect of synagogues and Jewish organizations is it's basically organizations that teach loyalty to Jews as a people, not even just the religious aspect of it, but it just teaches that Jews have to stand up and fight for Jewish interests and, of course, stand up for Israel, stand up for the interests of the Jews, and oppose anything that they feel, you know, doesn't get the Jewish agenda done. And so we're talking about $26 billion. These are assets. What is the other assets? Who knows? Another $30 billion. The numbers are so mind-boggling that it's hard to believe in. And again, understand, folks, these organizations universally advocate for open borders for America and Europe, while they support absolute high walls for Israel and closed borders. They advocate letting in millions of so-called refugees into European nations and America. At the same time, they support the Israeli state with no refugees. These organizations universally support gay marriage legalization in the United States of America. But they support Israel, which doesn't allow gay marriage, because they want to continue on the Jewish birth rate, but apparently they want to lessen our birth rate in our countries of European peoples. I mean, we can go on and on. They support gun control. The biggest funders of gun control, did a video on this, are Jews and many, many Jewish organizations. A good example, one of the biggest contributors to gun control efforts is Mr. Bloomberg, supposedly Republican conservative. But they all support Israel, which allows Jews to carry submachine guns in the street. The Jews are the biggest people, like the Jewish B'nai B'rith ADL, which says we can't have discrimination against people. It's evil for white people to want to live together in their own communities. It's evil for white people to want their own ethnostate. At the same time, it defends and supports the state of Israel, which is a state dedicated to Jews, a Jewish ethnostate. And the Jewish media. And we're just talking about Jewish money organizations here that are directly kind of monitoring the media so they make sure even the Jewish media doesn't mess up and in some ways put something out that exposes Jews. So they should have monitored this particular article. But again, they don't expect people like me to do it. And when people like me quote from the foreword, then it just, you know, proves they're an anti-Semite. You see, an anti-Semite today is a person who quotes Jewish sources proving that Jews are, as a group, not every Jew, but the Jewish establishment, the Jewish elite, the Jewish organized community, is the most racist, discriminatory, and anti everybody else organization on earth, because these are the same groups, the same yeshivas that put out all this stuff, how Gentiles are just basically evil, that Gentiles are inherently anti-Semitic, that Gentiles aren't even a people. They're not even a race. There's no race. It's just a social construct. While at the same time, they put out articles, including in publications like The Forward and The Jerusalem Post, and it's all known. Jews understand that they're a race. Netanyahu says the Jewish race quite often in speeches. We're going to protect the Jewish race. We're going to preserve the Jewish race. They say that they're a race, and then their own media to the Gentiles says, oh, they're not a race. You know, no, they just happen to be Jews who are doing all this, and they're not concerned. The hypocrisy is amazing, and that's why we've had the attempt to demonetize me on Google, and that's why that they want to suppress anybody. And not only do they have these $26 billion in these organizations and much more in the ones that we don't know about under the tip of the iceberg, but also, let's not forget that they control much of the media. Google itself is controlled by Jews. You know, Facebook, Mr. Zuckerman, and now they're controlling and they're censoring thing. The major media is controlling and censoring. So not only do they control the major media like the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, all the, not only do they do, and Hollywood, my God, Hollywood is so Jewish, but they also want to make sure that they shut up, suppress, destroy, just like they're doing right now to Richard Spencer. Horrible, the attacks that they're making and calling for his physical attacks. They want to suppress the other side. That's Dr. Slattery's been reviewing these articles over the last few minutes while we've been doing that. I'd like to get your comments, Dr. Slattery.
Well, Dr. Duke, yesterday you introduced a new definition of Zionism, a new definition of anti-Semitism. We have to keep expanding this definition, because they use it against everybody more and more broadly. You said just now an anti-Semite is somebody who reads Jewish sources or quotes from Jewish sources. I mean, it's getting even broader and broader. Just simply to read what Jews write to each other in Jewish sources makes you an anti-Semite, especially if you quote it.
Yeah.
Even quoting from the New York Times or the LA Times, David Brooks wrote in the New York Times about how Jews have taken over America. Joel Stein wrote in the Los Angeles Times. These are Jewish-owned newspapers, but they are for the Goyim. And to simply quote what they write in the New York Times and the LA Times about how they've taken over Hollywood, how Hollywood is so Jewish. And then Alan Dershowitz just last week in a speech saying that, you know, Jews have earned the right to dominate America. It's just so blatant and out there. And to simply quote what they tell us,
I believe it. But how in the world, here's the question. I don't want to interrupt too long, but I want to get your comment before we move on and we lose the point. If any white person, non-Jewish, European Christian, got up and said white Christians have the right to dominate America, how would the controlled media, the fake news media, react to that in this country, in your opinion?
It would be an outrage. It would be an outrage. They would be trying to find how this speech could be repressed, and if possible, how those people could be imprisoned.
Would there be headlines condemning them in every major paper?
It would be big news. Yes, it would be huge news. On the last show, Don Black was mentioning that, I think it was Don Black, that simply a business card had been left in a university in Michigan. And the business card pointed out that in 1950, America was 90% white. Today, it's 60% white. Donald Trump is the first step. You're the next step. And then it listed the Daily Stormer and the Right Stuff and a couple of other websites. That's all it said. And the dean of the university is taking this very seriously. They've launched an investigation.
But he puts the business cards out?
Just leaving business cards out.
Calling
for any violence, not calling for any illegality, simply pointing out that there's been a demographic change in the United States. And this has prompted an investigation. They're going to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. How many news articles? And I've seen thousands, even in American media, as well as, of course, Israeli media and media all over the world, about the so-called demographic threat to Israel. Have you seen thousands of articles? And how Israel has a right to be concerned over its demographic threat. When in reality, it has no demographic threat, because right now the Jewish birth rate eclipses even the occupied birth rate of the Palestinians in the area. That's how hard the Jewish state has been working on increasing the Jewish birth rate. And every census, Israel goes higher in percentage of the overall politicians, and the Palestinians drop in proportion, which is exactly the opposite of what they've orchestrated for America. Now, isn't that something? Think about that a second. And yet, somebody just puts out a card that points out the ethnic cleansing of white people in America. Oh my God! You know, it's the end of the world.
Right. There's the double standards are rampant, and there's so many. I mean, if you point out the demographic decline of the majority population of America, you're a hater, you're subjected to hate speech and having your YouTube demonetized and PayPal account shut down, you know, all the financial assets of the financial screws squeezed on you. If you try to take medicine over to Gaza, medicine or crayons even, you'll get arrested by the Israeli, the Israelis will throw you in an Israeli prison. If you try to send money, no, you can't send money. It's going to be all sorts of legal violations. Meanwhile, if you send money to the IDF, it's a tax write-off. And what you were talking about earlier in the program, this massive, huge infrastructure of Jewish so-called charities, which are just Jewish advocacy groups, It's
tax
a regular
write-off for them and our tax money going to Israel, right? That's what's they get a tax write-off. They pay less, and we pay a lot more, don't we?
Right.
Because every tax write-off they get, we have to pay more taxes because that's money that would have gone into our general fund for America, correct?
That's absolutely right. And this article that you're citing, it includes an interactive chart, and you can it's got a drop-down menu. You can see the salaries paid by all of these organizations. And there's some $12 billion in salaries that are being paid to the employees of federations and foundations that are promoting Jewish interests. So it's not just that they have the freedom of speech, but they have this massive tax-subsidized staff of employees. I mean, how many employees can you hire for $12 billion? Quite a few. Meanwhile, anybody who speaks out against it, you know, you're just scratching to earn a living because they shut down your finances. Yet we're winning, and they're afraid. And that's what could it be? What could it be that's put the momentum on our side? It's not money. It's got to be something intrinsic to our argument.
You know, another one of the series of these articles in the Jewish Forward, it's called now the Forward, but it was the Jewish Forward. Actually, it has a long descent. It used to be a communist Jewish organization, openly. Now it's become kind of a more leftist Jewish publication, but really a major Jewish publication in this country. And anyway, so the one of the series goes $26 billion, those Jewish charity parties. Now listen to this. Here's the first paragraph of that article. How do Jewish charities spend almost $100 million a year on parties? It starts with a sushi spread for a couple hundred people, full open bar, cotillion ballroom pier, and all of this is tax deductible, right? I mean, but you think about it now. Now, they spend $100 million just on their gala, what they call their galas, their parties. This is a perfect example. It says, a celebrity guest, perhaps Dr. Ruth R. Ely Wiesel, there you go, might say a few words. At the end of the night, hundreds of programs printed in heavy stock are forgotten on the floor, blah, blah, blah. So they spend $100 just on their galas, right, a year. But there's not one organization in this country that advocates for the European-American Christian majority. This is still over 60% of the population. Not one organization with a budget of $1 million. I don't think there's hardly any organizations with a budget of more than about $200,000 or $300,000 in the whole country. They spend $100 million a year on their galas alone. Now this is power. And anybody that tries to say that we're making things up, the Jews really don't have this power or they don't have influence and so forth, it's just a total lie. And it's just an example of the fact that this is published in Jewish publications for Jewish readership. But if someone tries to put it in the mainstream or quotes from it like you're doing and I'm doing, then they're called a vicious anti-Semite.
Yeah, and they put it in the mainstream. So we're not talking about the Learned Elders of Zion, the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. We're not talking about secret documents. We're not even talking about open documents that are intended for Jewish readership, although today the Ford article is intended for Jewish readership. But what's in the New York Post, New York Times, what's in the Los Angeles Times, speeches that are made in public, you can't even quote from that and not be called an anti-Semite. And once you're called an anti-Semite, they try to shut you down.
Let's analyze that, what you just said, too. But, you know, so let's just take an analysis of this, okay? So what you're really saying is that these people have so much power. It's just so ubiquitous everywhere. It gets mentioned by Jewish reporters and Jewish publications and Jewish media a lot. But if anybody ever just brings us together like you're doing and I'm doing right now, then you're vicious evil. You know, they can't help but mention these things in part and parcel. You know, they can't help but just point out this fact, that fact, this fact, you know, what's going on here or there. But if anybody ever puts it together and say, my God, look at the power of these Jewish advocacy or that. These are all organizations that they themselves say are dedicated to the Jewish people. not dedicated to all humanity, dedicated to the Jewish people and Jewish interests and the Jewish agenda. Even the World Jewish Congress is so-called, it talks about the World Jewish Agenda.
Yeah.
The Jewish agenda. You know, it's just mind-boggling. So all these facts are there in the mainstream media, but at the same time, they don't let people put it all together. If they did that, that's anti-Semitic.
And it's not, and even it goes beyond simply people like us stating what they say. Donald Trump is called an anti-Semite. Why? Because they suspect he knows. He does. What has he ever said that's in the least bit anti-Semitic?
Nothing.
But they suspect he knows, and that makes, and they'll call him an anti-Semite. They'll call him openly an anti-Semite simply because they suspect he knows. Well, they know he knows. He knows.
Well, also, he says it's a fake news media, which it is, because they talk about what they want to talk about for their own interest. Because we had fake wars. Like there was no other presidential candidate.
There's no Jewish media. That's a canard. These aren't wars, Jewish wars. That's a canard.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, and yet they admit that as well in their own publications of their incredible role in doing these insane wars that caused the injury to hundreds of thousands of Americans and millions of other people around the world, and also caused the rise of ISIS. I mean, because the interests of Israel and the Jewish organizations are not necessarily, in fact, they're not in the interest of our. Thanks, Dr. Slattery, for being with me and adding some commentary at the end. I had a long rant today, and I appreciate you hanging on and offering some comments very much.
It's always a pleasure.
It's my pleasure to have you on, and it's really the audience's pleasure as well to hear these facts. This is, I believe, one of our most amazing shows ever. It's so powerful. There's so much truth in this show. It's the kind of show you should listen to a number of times, learn the facts in here, learn where you can find the facts and quote the facts and cite the facts. And you've got some great ammunition for your friends at school or work or church or whatever. We got to get this truth out. That's what this show is all about. If you like it, support us. As you know, they're trying to shut us down financially and destroy our ability to finance the work that we're doing. This show itself is totally dependent upon you listeners. Thanks so much, everybody, and I'll be back again tomorrow. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.